Welcome. Bayern Munich may have the league wrapped up, but there's still stuff to talk about in the Bundesliga. Matt Ford was in Mönchengladbach this week and talked with Foles fans about the tough times at their club. VAR was once again in the headlines this week, and with it becoming a global phenomenon, we reopen the debate of how necessary the technology is. And by popular vote, we discuss Freiburg's fantastic start to 2018, as well as Monday night Bundesliga games. This is Tribune Weekly. Davis van Opdorp here with Matt Ford. Matt, take us to the match day.
German Federal League Division 1. Match day 23. Hertha Berlin Sport Club 0. The First Football Club of Mainz 05. 2. The First Football Club of Cologne 1. Hanoverian Sport Club of 1896 1. Sport Club Freiburg 1. Sport Club Werder Bremen 0. Hamburger Sport Club 1. Bayer 04 Leverkusen 2. Club for Physical Exercise Wolfsburg Football 1. Football Club Bavaria Munich 2. Football Club Schalke 04 2. Gymnastics and Sports Society 1899 Hoffenheim 1. Football Club Augsburg 0. Club for Agility Games Stuttgart 1. Club for Physical Exercise Prussia Mönchengladbach 0. Ball Games Club Prussia 09 Dortmund 1.
So speaking of that Borussia tie, Matt Fort was in Mönchengladbach this week and caught up with some Foles fans about their state of their club.
Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to this latest section of the Tribune podcast on the road. On the road in German football, and today on a bright but relatively cold Sunday afternoon, we are in a small, tiny village near Mönchengladbach, watching, for the time being, a Division 6 game. Before we get started, why are we watching a Division 6 game? I'm hoping that the man stood next to me here in Odenkirchen can answer that question, because Jim is a groundhopper, a groundhopper from England. Jim, can you explain, perhaps, it sounds completely bizarre, what is an Englishman, an English football fan, doing watching a Division 6 match near Mönchengladbach on a Sunday afternoon?
Well, it's an opportunity to come here and go to Borussia Mönchengladbach and Dortmund, so maybe I wouldn't directly have come here for any for a specific reason, but it's an opportunity. But it's a nice little ground. There's a bit of terrace, there's a clubhouse with some nice beers and some sausages, and a nice atmosphere. It's close, it just fits.
What does a groundhopper do?
Visits as many grounds as they can, so looks for an opportunity to go new places.
How many grounds have you visited as a groundhopper?
Nearly 800.
Okay, so would you often plan your trips or plan weekends in Germany or in England or in different countries purely specifically to see how many stadiums or how many new clubs you can visit per trip?
Yeah, so if I'm going on holiday, to be honest, I always look at whether what the fixtures are for the local teams, and I try and combine that with a bit of a holiday. And if I'm going to another country, then yeah, I look out for places that I can get to, and and games that I can go to and try and fit them in. Yeah.
So how has this current trip worked out? How many grounds have you managed to squeeze in on this trip?
This is a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, so unfortunately I had some postponements yesterday due to the weather. Otherwise I would have done 5.
That's the risk of ground hopping in February, I presume.
It is, yes. So, but 4 on this trip should be.
Who have you seen?
Preußen Münster against Hansa Rostock on Friday night. Vale against Fortuna Düsseldorf yesterday.
That Düsseldorf
second team. Yeah. And this game at Odenkirchen, and afterwards it'll be Mönchengladbach and Dortmund. So a range of matches across the levels, really.
Having visited over 800 football grounds, is there one particular ground or club or trip that stands out?
Or what?
For any particular reason?
So there are lots, but obviously I like going to FC United, my own team. In Argentina, going to Racing was a great experience. The fan passion and the atmosphere there was superb. Yeah.
Fantastic. So there we go. There's a few short stories from a groundhopper who's visited, as we heard, over 800 football grounds, not just in Germany, not just in Europe, but as far afield as Argentina. Obviously, being in a village near Mönchengladbach, a lot of the fans here today, and I must admit, there are many. I think what's the attendance today? Would we say 150, 200?
Yeah.
Among the 200 supporters here, there are obviously lots of Borussia Mönchengladbach fans, many who will be making the trip after the full-time whistle to the Borussia Park to see the Bundesliga game against Borussia Dortmund. One of them is Tom, a Borussia Mönchengladbach fan here. You're going to the game later, but obviously it's not going too well for Borussia Mönchengladbach at the moment. How would you describe how the team is playing?
I think it's a lot of players here, and they not in form from the trainer.
So you think a lot of the blame has to be given to the coach, Dieter Hecking?
Yes. Dieter Hecking, it's not so good for the Borussia. I think so many players are ill or too slowly, and the fans want to see another football.
The fans want to see more attacking football.
Attacking, fast football, like Favre, the trainer before.
Lucien Favre, who of course took Borussia Mönchengladbach into the Champions League.
And the fans love him. And Dieter Hecking, it's not so...
Why is it such a problem? In the last three games, Gladbach have lost the last three and have not even scored a single goal. Yeah. And yet there are such great players, such as Lars Stindl, Torgen Hazard, Raphael. These are good attacking players. Why can't you score goals?
But together they can't play. It's a good player alone, but together it's nothing.
Okay, so you think there's a problem maybe getting the players to gel into a proper unit?
I can't understand what they do on the training. Okay.
At the moment, Borussia Mönchengladbach is, I think, 9th or 10th?
It's the 10th.
10th in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
What do you expect this season? Do you expect that Gladbach will be in the Europa League?
No. I don't. So it's not so good. I think we go better to place 10 and have a new start in the new season. It's better for us.
And then hopefully it will work better next season. Would you like to see a new coach at Borussia Mönchengladbach?
I think it's Jens Keller, the new trainer for me.
Okay. Yeah. The former Union Berlin coach, who was recently sacked from the Division 2 team in Berlin. So finally, before we go out to watch the second half of this Division 6 game, a prediction for the game later. What do you think the score will be between
today,
Gladbach and Dortmund?
Today, I think Love won.
1-0 2. Borussia Dortmund. Okay, so not very optimistic, but
I have so many games from Borussia. See, it's so not so good today.
So that's the head talking over the heart. The heart has seen enough. Jim, prediction for you for later on?
I was expecting to be more even, so I will go for 1-1, but.
1-0. Okay. Well, let's see how the rest of this game here on the outskirts of Mönchengladbach develops, and we'll see if we can speak to a few more fans nearer the ground slightly later on. So now we've left the non-league ground and we're on a bus, on a shuttle bus from Wright to Borussia Park. I think it's the only way to reach Borussia Park because it's quite a difficult stadium to get to. I think in the Bundesliga, I think it's probably the most difficult stadium to get to. You either have to go via Mönchengladbach or via Wright and then get a fan bus from there. And on the bus, I'm with two supporters. I'm with Jonas, who's actually a Borussia Dortmund supporter, and Arne, who's a Gladbach fan. Arne, I'm just going to start with you. How are you feeling about Borussia Mönchengladbach in 2018? It's not been a perfect start, has it?
That's right. It's not a perfect start, especially in comparison to the last season. It's quite bad, and the feelings at the fans are also not so good as last season. And we hope to get to the Europa League, but it's quite difficult right now.
I was speaking to a Gladbach supporter before, and he thinks it might be too difficult to get the Europa League now because Gladbach are 9th or 10th in the league. So you still think it's possible. Why do you think it's still possible?
Yeah, I think it's possible because all other teams do not play their best football, and especially, for example, Schalke, they won the last games, but other competitors of us also do not play their best football this season, so it's still possible.
Despite having some very exciting players up front, like Lars Stindl, like Raphael, like Hazard, Gladbach are struggling to score goals at the moment. Do you think that's a problem, and what do you think has to change?
It's a really difficult question because last season we scored a lot. Our defense is sometimes good, sometimes bad. I think we have to get more chances before the goal and have more chances and more luck, maybe.
What do you think of Dieter Hecking, the coach? Do you think he's a good coach for Gladbach?
I think he's an average coach, but it's not the best coach, especially for young players. But at all, it's everything fine with him, for me.
As we said, we're getting a bus out to the stadium, which is in quite a difficult location. What do people in Mönchengladbach think about the location of the new stadium? Because obviously you used to play in the Buckelberg, which was, I think that was more central, wasn't it?
Was that more central? It's about 13 or 14 years ago. It was located in the center of Mönchengladbach. But the location right now, it's more located to the highway. So for people which come from far away, it's more easy to come there.
We're also here with Jonas. Now, we said you're actually a Borussia Dortmund supporter. Let's talk a little bit about Dortmund's season. Dortmund are unbeaten under Peter Stöger.
Yeah, that's right.
But on the other hand, maybe the football is not absolutely fantastic. What do you think?
Yeah, that's definitely right. Last season with Tuchel, we played better football. But this season, it's a little bit difficult. We had a new trainer. With Peter Bosch and now Peter Stöger, and but all in all, we are achieving our goals. So right now we are on the fourth rank, and today we can get a second rank. So all in all, it's fine, but it's not the best season. So in comparison to the last seasons,
What did you think of the whole Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang situation?
Oh, it was quite difficult. So all in all, I'm pretty happy that he's now away because it was a difficult situation. And with Batshuayi, we have a good striker now.
Five goals in three games.
Yeah, it's awesome. But it's pretty difficult to buy him after the season. So we will see.
As you said, Peter Stöger has come in and replaced Peter Bosch after a quite incredible downward spiral towards the end of the first half of the season. Do you think Peter Stöger is just a temporary solution, or do you think he's the right man for the future, or do you expect a change in summer?
Yeah, I hope it's just temporary because I'm looking to a trainer who has a bigger concept to integrate young players, to have an own vision, a big picture. And Peter Stöger right now is fine, but I'm looking for a trainer with a vision.
Okay, Marco Reus is back as well. He's played two games after his injury. Is that important for Dortmund?
Yeah, it is important. In the past, he has shown that he is an important player, and he's good for us. And right now, Schüle is getting stronger as well. So we are on a good way.
So can we get a prediction for the game today? Do you think Dortmund are going to win?
2-0 for Dortmund.
2-0 for Dortmund. And Arne, prediction from you. I assume you don't agree with that.
Yeah, I definitely don't agree. I think it's a difficult game, but we win with one goal, 1-0.
Arne says 1-0 to Dortmund. Before, we had Jim saying 1-1, and we had Tom saying 1-0 to Dortmund, you said, didn't you? Well, to Dortmund. I'm going to go for a much more goal-filled game. I think 2-2 2-2 for me.
2-2,
it's okay. So, thank you, lads. Enjoy the game.
Thank you.
So, it's full-time here in Mönchengladbach, where the black and yellow Borussia have beaten the black and white Borussia 1-0. A first half goal from Marco Reus. It was the first time that Dortmund coach Peter Stöger had started Marco Reus, Mario Götze and André Schürrle in the starting 11 in his short time as Dortmund coach. And in fact, it was the first time that the three of them had been on the pitch together in a Dortmund shirt since an away game in Mainz in January of last year. Before that, they'd only ever actually played 25 minutes of football together in the Borussia Dortmund team. But the potential and the potency of that particular triumvirate is clear to see. The three of them linked up particularly well, especially in the first half. And of course, it all came together for the goal, which was after good build-up play involving both Schürrle and Götze, was a fantastic finish from Marco Reus. Not that it particularly pleased the home fans, the Gladbach fans. They greeted every touch of the ball from their former player with deafening whistles and boos, but such is football. And in the press conference afterwards, Peter Stöger was also very complimentary of the three and said that he can well imagine that being a good combination for Dortmund going forward. For Borussia Mönchengladbach, we were talking before the game that they've been having problems scoring goals. They're now four Bundesliga games without a point and without a single goal, and those familiar problems were there again for them today. Lots of promising build-up play, especially in the second half, from the likes of Hazard and Stindl, but it just won't go over the line. Admittedly, today they had an inspired goalkeeper in Roman Bürki to beat in the Dortmund goal. Pulled off some fantastic saves in the second half. Matthias Ginter said afterwards that, look at Marco Reus's shot bouncing off the bar. If that had been our shot, it had bounced out. It would have bounced out. So that's what the Gladbach players and the fans, I suppose, seem to think at the moment, that luck is just not on their side. But yeah, that's all then for tonight in Mönchengladbach. I'm off to find somewhere that'll sell me a beer. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
So that was Matt Fort in Mönchengladbach. Now, Matt, this was not only... it was a basically the big reunion tour, the Beatles reunion tour for Mario Götze, Marco Reus, and André Schürrle.
The fantastic three.
Yeah. So in the stadium, what was that like? Because, I mean, I'm sure that you saw the team sheet and were like, oh my God, are these three guys playing together? Just take us through what you thought of how the three of them played and your reaction to them playing together for the first time and maybe forever.
Well, the reaction was obviously one of excitement, because it was something that everyone has suspected for the past couple of weeks, especially since Marco Reus made his comeback. But Peter Stöger always made it pretty clear, I think, that he had absolutely nothing against the idea of all three playing together. I think some journalists and commentators were suggesting that, oh, perhaps he's got something against it, something's holding him back from playing all three together behind Batshuayi. Maybe that was the case, but he always said, no, it's not a problem, and when they're available, they will play, and he went for it.
My immediate thought was he's gone for such an attacking lineup because he knows how harmless Borussia Mönchengladbach have been in front of goal recently. So perhaps he thought that gives him a little bit more leeway to play such an offensive formation. Because of course we know that even the two holding midfielders, Julian Weigl and Gonzalo Castro, on occasion, Weigl especially, can also get forward a little bit as well. I think he's looking for a balance between knowing that Dortmund is still a bit susceptible at the back and also aware that, well, Gladbach haven't scored in four games, so maybe he could get away with it. And he did. It worked, especially in the first half.
We saw this chance that Torgan Hazard missed too, after having a terrific run. If he can't score that, then
there were a few. There was Hazard. There was Lars Stindl had the first big chance in the first half. We've said it before in the podcast. Gladbach was typical, and they have their own fantastic three themselves in Hazard, Raphael, and Stindl. Obviously, Raphael didn't play yesterday. Hoffman played in his place.
Oh, Raúl Bobadilla.
Bobadilla started up front.
Oh,
but I think that also goes back to what I was saying about them lacking this goal scorer up front. Obviously, Dortmund have acted quickly to get Batshuayi in for Aubameyang, and. Obviously, Babadie has been injured as well, but a hecking turn to him, I think, maybe he's a bit of a last resort, saying we have to have some sort of proper striker up front. And, well, for me personally, he didn't do it. I thought, right, when I saw his name on the team sheet, I'll keep an eye on him, because this is exactly what Gladbach need. A proper striker, a physical player, a goal scorer in the box. That's what he was bought for. And one moment sums it up in the first half, when Jonas Hoffmann put in a fantastic ball from the right-hand side, hard and low across the 6-yard box. Who do you expect to be there? Bobadilla, where were you, son? Nowhere near. And that summed it up. And it was, from a Gladbach point of view, frustrating, especially in the second half, because they combined well again. But in the second half, they had Roman Bürki to blame, to be honest. He had an absolutely fantastic game, a couple of brilliant saves, especially from a Nico Elvedi header. And you thought, nah, they're not scoring today, because Bürki, for the first time in a while, was on form.
Some people, from what I've seen on social media, some people would also say the pitch was to blame, because I only saw highlights, obviously. I didn't see the full game, and I wasn't there, and it looked like a trailer park after there was a NASCAR race. So what was it like to see in person?
Well, it was the first thing I noticed when I walked into the stands and went to take my seat. I looked down and thought, what have I walked into here? And even from that high up, the press seats are quite high at Borussia Park, and you thought, oh God, that doesn't look clever. As we heard on the podcast, 2 hours previously, I'd been at a Division 6 match, and that was on a 3G pitch. So I thought maybe in hindsight they should have switched the games around and played the Division 6 game at Borussia Park and played Gladbach against Dortmund on the 3G pitch with a capacity of 100. But it did affect the game. There were moments, especially Schürrle a couple of times, I think I recall, in the first half, slipping. Royce took a big divot out of the pitch at one point. Doesn't lend itself to good football.
All right, so we have been really, really good about not talking about VAR since the first half of the season. But there was a lot of outrage, that I saw on social media, a lot of outrage from the man across from me, Matt Ford, because he wrote a whole commentary about it. There's going to be a discussion
no
here.
No end of hassle for that.
Yeah, there's going to be a discussion here, because I am actually a proponent of video assistant refs, and from what I understand, Matt Ford is against it. So, Matt, why don't you do your point first, and I'll put in a counterpoint when I can.
Yeah, the point's simple. So as a match-going supporter in the stadium, it takes the emotion out of it, and I honestly believe, genuinely, as a personal opinion, that whether the decision's correct or not, is ultimately irrelevant.
But isn't that the point? The point of this whole project was to prevent these offside goals, to prevent Thierry Henry getting away with a handball into the goal, to prevent Cristiano Ronaldo from being 2 feet offsides and still getting away with it. I mean, looking through all the calls yesterday,
They were all correct. Yeah, there's no argument about that, and I totally accept that.
But doesn't that mean that even if there's, because there was the biggest complaint was that it affects the flow of the game, right? But ultimately, I think in a more long-term view, I do believe that fans would think that having the right result is more important than necessarily how the result is made.
I think this is the crux of the issue, and we'll probably never reach agreement on it because it's a subjective and personal opinion, and everyone's entitled to that. Like you said, the decisions this weekend were all key decisions and all ultimately correct. Cologne's last-minute winner was... Yeah, Mas Larissa was offside when he crossed the ball. So the goal shouldn't have said that was correct. In the Schalke game, Schalke's second goal...
The first goal, the Brillembo's first attempt at a goal was...
And Bolo's first goal. It would have been Schalke's second. Also offside. And Vestergaard in the Gladbach game, offside. And the one thing that caught the attention, I think, globally, like outside the Bundesliga, was the goal in the Man United Huddersfield game, which was also technically by the letter of the law, Juan Mata's knee was offside. So all technically correct decisions, but as I wrote in the piece, it ultimately comes down to what you value more as a supporter. If as a football supporter you value accuracy, justice, and correct decisions 100% of the time, that's your prerogative. That's absolutely fine. In my opinion, I value the emotion, the emotional rawness and spontaneity of live football, and I believe that it is robbed by VAR.
Well, here's the thing for me. I mean, the Cologne game was a very interesting case study because I thought the linesman. That was on, I guess, for the TV point of view, he was on the far side of the field. I think he had an absolutely awful game. There's no, you can't excuse him from the performance that he had. I mean, there were two times where
was he on that wing where Rissa played.
He was
on
that wing where Rissa was playing.
He really should have been seeing that himself. You're right. There should be no need for VAR in that situation. He should be seeing it.
Now. For me, there's no difference to me than a VAR decision overturning a goal, than an offside flag overturning a goal. The difference between the two is the immediacy of it, which is there was even in the Augsburg game when it was Michael Gregoritsch's goal that was ultimately disallowed. Manuel Baum, even on the sideline, knew that goal was offside, and yet it still took too long for the referees to basically decide that the goal should have been disallowed. Now, what I believe what will happen is this is the first season of VAR. I do genuinely believe that the decisions will eventually get quicker, but I understand that fans do not like these growing pains that it's going through, especially in the first half of the season when Cologne lost a lot of momentum and many times because of wrong VAR decisions or over particular VAR decisions.
I don't even think the speed thing is that much of an issue anymore. I think that has got better. I think, particularly the Cologne decision, the Schalke decision particularly was quite quick. The Vestergaard decision was relatively quick. I've got no issue with that. I just don't think that's the point. I just think that's missing the point. And like I said, it comes down to what you value more. And personally, as a football fan, I am personally happy to accept, even when it affects my own team. And every football fan has had decisions go against their team, not just with VAR, but for the past 50, 60, 70, 100 years. I'm happy to accept that it goes against you sometimes. I am genuinely happy to accept that. I've seen my club lose league titles on them. I've seen my club win league titles on them. I'm happy to accept it. I also accept that others see it differently, and that's fine.
Yeah, I think one of the points that you made earlier in the season, which I think is somewhat valid, is who is football serving in this instance with VAR? And you made the point, if I remember this correctly, you made the point that, and I thought it was a good one, that they were serving the television audience rather than the audience in the stadium. And because the television audience are the ones that I think get more upset about certain calls, because they're the ones that can see the replays five times and And fans obviously can see some replays. Yeah, there are some replays in stands, I can
totally understand them from that point of view. And it does make sense when you say, oh, well, if the TV viewers can see 5 or 6 instant replays from various angles confirming a decision one way or the other, then why can't the ref see them too? And yeah, I accept that. And it does seem daft not to use it. But again, at what price? And if it comes... at what price? And then it becomes a subjective opinion of what you value more. It comes down to that. I don't think there's a right and wrong. Perhaps, I was thinking about this, perhaps there is a middle ground which I'd like to see tested out, seeing as they're in a test phase and we're testing everything, of giving a manager, say, 1 call per half or 2 calls per half or whatever. Because at least that would then, it would put that agency back in the hands of the coaches or even the captain on the pitch. It'd be down to them.
I think that's a very interesting way to go about it because obviously that's essentially the challenge system that you have in the United States where the coach gets, in NFL football, the coach gets 2 challenges and if he gets both of the challenges correct, then he gets a 3rd challenge. They still review some stuff, but it actually takes a lot of the guesswork out of the game. And part of the strategy with that too, which is actually kind of funny, is that if the team decides to continue the play quickly, then that takes that. If an NFL team runs the next play before the coach can throw the challenge flag. He can't challenge the call anymore. Yes, exactly. And that's kind of the strategy.
So it basically retains that potential for human error.
Yeah.
Which I think, as much as I totally understand the call, say, well, if we've got the technology available to rule out human error, why not use it? I get that.
But it's still human error.
On the other hand, human error is part of the game, surely. And like I said, it comes down to whether you're prepared to accept that as a football fan or not. Many aren't, and that's fine. Personally, I am. I'm more than prepared to accept that the players on my team will make mistakes and that the referee on the pitch will make mistakes. I think that's part of the game.
I do think that they will streamline it. I think that one of the things that they can't do now is I don't think they're going to take it away.
No, I don't think they will either.
There's many fans, of course, in the stadiums that we've seen calling for them to say this, basically calling in Germany, calling for them to say this was a mistake and take it away. It's being rolled out in multiple leagues. It's not something that they can take away. I think this is the new world that we have to live in and either accept or either not. And if you don't accept, then you have to decide how you're going to watch your football games. But I don't think that this is something that will eventually go away. You know, in some other sports, they have tried some stuff and taken it away. But this was this has been called for so many years. This whole video replay system has been called for so many years, along with goal line technology was the first step. And when they instituted that, it was only a matter of time before they were going to have video assistance.
It's a difficult comparison because goal line technology,
of course,
is 50-50 black and white and spontaneous. Yeah. It doesn't affect any aspect of the game at all.
Very easy to implement.
Very easy to implement. Doesn't affect anyone's experience at home or in the stadium. VAR does. I agree. I don't think it's going to go anywhere either. Doesn't mean I have to find that good though.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, we still have the World Cup. If it affects a call in the World Cup and they don't get it right, I think that there will be serious questions raised. But still, I still think it's not going anywhere.
I agree. I don't think it's going anywhere either. But the cynic in me thinks one day we're going to see the VAR break sponsored as well.
That's true. So, I mean, because you have to also consider that as well. I mean, they're promoting this obviously for a TV audience, like we said. And if they start having basically progressive insurance in the United States, which isn't even, and they have it in the Bundesliga, which doesn't even make any sense. If they're the ones sponsoring this VAR call, was sponsored by Progressive Insurance, then yeah, that's where the rabbit hole begins.
I'm sure other insurance providers are available.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's the first one I thought of because they're a huge sponsor in the States for Premier League football.
So. Are they paying you?
They're not paying me to say that. But no, I think that's a very valid point. And I think that the Bundesliga has actually done a good job of avoiding that for the most part, outside of the Krumbacher ads that we see on Sky all the time and the Bitburger ads we see for the German Cup. But
or the premium lagers are available.
But at least they're promoting like premium lagers. But I think you're right that it is the Germany has been able to avoid over sponsorship with their coverage, and I think that this could be an opening to end that. All right, so we had a very, very tight race in our Shout from Rosette this week. So thank you all again for voting. I'm glad that this is getting some traction, and I'm sure I can speak for all of us that we're glad that you guys are getting more engaged in the podcast.
Today was exciting. We had a last minute comeback, a last minute equalizer.
Neck and neck the entire 89 minutes, and then the 90th minute we
should
equalizer.
Have gone to extra time.
Yeah, should have gone to extra time, but
golden vote.
Yeah. So the two topics that you guys chose were the Bundesliga Monday matches. Of course, if you notice in our usual score reading at the beginning, we missed one. We only did eight, and that's because RB Leipzig and Eintracht Frankfurt are going to play after we record this podcast. But first, I want to touch on the one that was leading for most of the way, which was the fantastic Freiburg. Now, I was looking at their fixture list. I think I overrated their fixture list a little bit. But they still have only lost one game in 2018. Of course, I said that with Frankfurt last week, but with this week, it seems a little bit even more impressed with Freiburg, considering their resources and considering the kind of club that they are. So, Matt, I think you had a good starting point for this topic. So why don't you take it away?
Yeah, as you said, just one defeat for Freiburg in this calendar year. And of course, the reason they're still actually 12th and still only 5 points clear of relegation. Let's not forget that and get too carried away. But the reason they are down there is because they had such a disastrous start. I think they only won one of their opening 12 games, so that goes some way to explaining why they are still down where they are despite a series of really positive results. And yeah, for me, what they've turned around, especially since the winter break, it's just they've become much more solid at the back. Either in 5-4-1 or 4-4-2, they've shut up shop really, really well. And I think that's a trait that comes from Christian Streich, and we saw him trying to implement it at the start of the season. Just on the way here, it occurred to me the Borussia Dortmund fixture away at Freiburg early on, which I think finished 0-0, didn't it? I think Dortmund.
And they were
some
man down too. They had the red card.
Were Freiburg down to 10 men as well?
Yeah, they were down to 10 men because of the VAR decision. Ironically enough,
yeah, they were. And despite, I think Dortmund had about 83% possession or something ridiculous in that game and couldn't break them down. So that plan was always there. It worked perfectly on that occasion, but throughout the rest of the first half of the season, it seemed to fall away. But yeah, they've responded really, really well to that. A second contributing factor to it, I think, is just the general attitude that it's a never say die attitude that he's instilled in that team. They've had some really impressive comebacks. You think of the 4-3 win away at Cologne, the 3-3 draw away at Augsburg. They came from 1-0 down against Red Bull Leipzig to win 2-1. I think that speaks volumes. Adding goals up front as well through Niels Pettersson. He's having an absolutely fantastic season.
Niels Pettersson's emergence, I think, is a huge factor because he has kind of had this reputation of, which is kind of the Simon Terodde reputation of just being a second division striker that was just never good enough to quite break through into the top flight. Now, of course, the sides that he played for, Bayern Munich, he came in under Jupp Heynckes's first season, and he basically was supposed to be the backup for Mario Gomez, but wasn't really much of a backup. And they went out and got Mario Mandzukic the next season. And that's a really hard situation if you're coming from Energie Cottbus and you're trying to break into Bayern Munich's team. That is a really, really tall ask. And I've seen interviews that he's done since, and he said obviously he wouldn't regret this decision. When you get a chance to play for Bayern Munich, you do it. But then he went to Werder Bremen, and that's also not like the best club considering the chaotic managerial and sporting director turnover that they've had. And going to a club like Freiburg, and even going down with Freiburg when they got relegated two seasons ago, I think that that's when he really became integrated and became a real professional, having the experience of going down to the second division.
He's also taken on the captain's armband as well.
Exactly, and become a part of the club too, and kind of taken his opportunity, but taken also the responsibility of the club. And I think that that has been really key, especially with the departures of players like Maximilian Philipp and Vincenzo Grifo. And you have the full list there. Why don't you read some of the players?
Yeah, I was just researching the whole issue before, and it's just we're all well aware of how good a record Freiburg and Christian Streich have of bringing through players who then move on to bigger and better things up that famous Bundesliga food chain, which seems to exist. But it goes on. Obviously, we've mentioned Maximilian Philipp, Vincenzo Grifo, Admir Mehmedi, Vladimir Darida, Roman Berkey, Matthias Ginter, Daniel Caligiuri, Max Kruse, Omer Toprak. All right, you might argue none of which are absolute world beaters are going to set Europe alight, but certainly very, very solid Bundesliga players from a range of positions and a range of qualities who have gone on to play for a range of different clubs. Whether Niels Petersen will end up being the next name on that list, it could be.
I have more maybe it's just my naivete, but I think I have more confidence that he's kind of cemented in that team now.
I think so, and he's not come through at that team. He seems to have found his level there. I think that's absolutely fine, but like I said, taking on responsibility, taking up the spot kicks, he probably should have taken the second penalty as well. I think, was it Harbour
yeah,
missed the second one.
He didn't want to, though, and that's basically part of the leadership that I think he kind of shows, that he was the one that drew the penalty. He's already taken a penalty. He's already gotten his goal. It was late in the game. He wanted to get someone else a chance to do it. And I think that shows an unbelievable amount of character from such a veteran player. And that was the reason why, I remember 2 years ago, he was part of the Olympic squad. And I mean, people were wondering, why is Niels, with all the quality of professional players in Germany, why is Niels Petersen the one that's going to be in the Olympic squad? He has no national team future, but it's because of the character that he has, and him with the two Bender brothers really helped provide a veteran presence for that team that ultimately went to the gold medal game before losing to the Neymar-infused Brazil.
No, it's been really impressive in the last 10 or 11 games for them. But like I said, we mustn't forget they are only still 5 points clear of relegation, and there are still only two teams in the league who have conceded more goals than Freiburg, and that's Cologne and Mainz.
But I will say, earlier in the season when they were having this run, were you worried? How worried were you that, I mean, this is obviously hindsight.
There were a couple of weeks where I thought they're doomed.
Yeah.
I did. You didn't know where the strikes were coming from up front. Seeing that, yeah, Christian Streich had his plan, but it wasn't working. It wasn't being implemented. They wanted to be defensive. They wanted to be solid, but it just wasn't coming together. All credit to Christian Streich for confidence in his own ability, not just in his own tactics, but in his ability to get those ideas and those tactics across to his team, and turn the corner. All credit, and it's a theme and a self-confidence and a self-awareness which runs through the entire club. And given recent developments, especially regarding Mainz, although they won, and it was a very good result away at Hertha, and Hamburg's collapse, yeah, certainly more confidence now that Freiburg have got enough to stay up.
I don't know. I mean, maybe I just had... I never really seriously considered Freiburg as a relegation candidate. They were, I think, floating with the relegation zone earlier in the season.
With one win in the opening 12, I definitely
they were definitely down there. And I think I mean, I had them going straight down at the peak when they came back up.
We should both know better because we've both seen this steady, impressive development at Freiburg over the past few years.
Yeah, exactly.
Whether it was back in Division Two, which they've won three times in the past 10 or 11 years, and even when they weren't, they were recording consistently high finishes, a couple of fourth place finishes, a fifth place finish in Bundesliga Two. Up to a fifth place finish in the top division. So this steady development has been there, and so yeah, maybe we were jumping the gun a bit too soon and writing them off too quickly, because after all, Christian Streich, who I believe is the longest serving current Bundesliga coach, I think I'm right in saying that.
I think you are too.
After Stöger left Cologne.
Mm-hmm.
We should know better. So hands up. Sorry to Christian Streich and Freiburg for writing you off too soon, but they should be okay.
Now, one thing that I think we talked about preparing for this segment, and I think that it's very important to talk about, is their new stadium.
Yeah, exciting plans afoot in Freiburg.
Yeah. So they have their capacity is
24,000.
24,000, yeah. So it's
pretty much sold out every week at the moment.
By the way, that is not big, but it's also not small. You look at a team like Eibar in Spain, and there is basically an amateur ground in Germany. It's under 10,000, but still it's they sell out every week. They've had fans in the second division and the first division. It hasn't changed, but they are building a new stadium, and they're going to be playing in a new stadium next year. And we've talked about doing a Tribuna podcast special in the stadium, but it's not near the center of town like the current stadium is. And for me, I wonder, is it going to be a little bit disenchanting for some of the fans that basically can just go, that are just a heart of, since the stadium is at the heart of the city and will no longer be.
Well, we were talking to, as we heard in the first segment, we were talking to the Gladbach fans about precisely that when we were on the shuttle buses from outside Mönchengladbach, a town called Reit, on the shuttle bus to the stadium. The new Borussia Park is out in the middle of nowhere on the motorway. And the fans there said, well, yeah, obviously it makes it easy to get to for fans coming from a bit further afield. For fans in and around Mönchengladbach, though, it means going to the main station, getting on a shuttle bus, sitting in the traffic, and it is difficult to get to. Whether that will end up being a similar situation in Freiburg, yeah, I can see it happening, and it is that those sort of locations are popular for clubs to build grounds these days. Ingolstadt is an example. Augsburg is an example.
Bayern Munich is an example.
Bayern Munich is an example. Of course. Where else have we had? Yeah, there are a few, and I think.
I mean, even the Olympic Stadium in Berlin. I mean, it's no wonder that they trouble to get they have trouble getting fans to their games.
Well, I think when it was built at the time, it was probably a little bit further out than it is now, because Berlin itself has expanded.
Yeah,
and enveloped the Olympic Stadium area a little bit. But the Olympic Stadium in Munich, the original Olympic Stadium where Bayern used to play, it isn't close to city centre either. But how are you going to build these new grounds?
You need space.
You need more space, and Freiburg's ground is situated right in the foothills of the Black Forest. I don't imagine, I'm no building or construction expert, but I don't imagine that's that easy to construct a new stadium there. Like, there's pros and cons. We've touched on the negatives, that it's going to be in the middle of nowhere. From the plans, it looks from the outside like it reminded me of Ingolstadt, and no offense to Ingolstadt, that's not a good model to follow for a stadium. It's a bit soulless. On the positive side, they are building it with the fans in mind. It's going to have 34,700 seats or 700 places, of which 12,500 will be standing tickets on one big terrace behind the goal, which for anyone who watches any German football, that's absolutely key to keep the prices down and to keep the atmosphere loud. So that's good. And given that they're filling 24,000 every week at the moment, there's positives to it as well.
I think we also have to remember how isolated Freiburg is as a city from basically the rest of the Swabian region. I mean, it's almost Switzerland. That's how close to the border it is.
Not far from Switzerland.
So you see some of these grounds, like in Augsburg, you mentioned, but And Augsburg is a different situation than Freiburg because Augsburg's only 40 minutes away from Munich. So if you if it takes you so long to get from the Augsburg city center to the stadium, why wouldn't you take your car to Allianz Arena and support their team instead? So that, I think, is I think it's a little bit different. But because Freiburg is kind of so isolated,
well, they've definitely got a bit of a slightly captive audience, and
right. Yeah, so maybe I'm wrong, and it won't be disenchanting at all. Just the fans, it'll just take longer for the fans to get to their stadium.
I think the majority will recognise that football clubs have to take a step. They have to develop. They need to develop grounds. That's absolutely key. It just depends how you go about it. I think some clubs do it well, others less well. I think Tottenham Hotspur is an example of exactly how to do a new ground. Obviously, they're lucky in that they can stay in the same region, but I think they're building that absolutely correctly. Big terrace behind the goal, ring fencing a number of season tickets for local residents, so it keeps the local support. Negative examples of how to build a new stadium would be. Yeah, sorry again. Ingolstadt and Augsburg, not my favorite Bundesliga ground.
Yeah, those Bavarian clubs, they don't do it right.
It's a shame, but it's getting that balance right. It can be found, so fingers crossed, Freiburg can do it as well.
I said that tongue in cheek, obviously, but we definitely have to do a field trip.
We all
want to go.
One of the two Bundesliga grounds that I've not been to, and time is ticking.
Yeah,
I'm now conscious that I'm running out of time.
Yeah.
So
we will do our pilgrimage to Freiburg and
Tribune Podcast on tour.
It's Tribune Podcast on tour. The other topic, like I said at the beginning, was the Bundesliga Monday games. And before we get into the discussion, it seems like we don't like it. And I can come up with reasons why that you probably will agree with. But first, I think that you think you made a good point that we need to kind of establish the two sides, which is the DFL side and the fan side. So why don't you do that?
Yeah, this is the first season where there have been officially scheduled Monday night fixtures in the Bundesliga. There have been Monday night fixtures before, but for various other reasons, which have usually just been exceptions for various issues at the time. This is the first year where they've been planned in. This has been known for about a year and a half or 2 years that this season there will be five Monday night Bundesliga games. The three have already been scheduled. We've obviously got, like we said, we've got Red Bull Leipzig away at Eintracht Frankfurt tonight. We've got Borussia Dortmund versus Augsburg next week. And on Monday the 12th of March, it's Bremen against Cologne. Why has this been done? The DFL say that it's not for financial gain. They say that it's the media and television revenue accumulated from these five Monday night games is less than 1% of the overall 1.36 billion euros, which is the entire Bundesliga TV rights package. So they say the financial gain is negligible. They say this has been done purely for sporting reasons, to give the Bundesliga's Europa League participants an extra day's rest. Which in this particular case works very well for Red Bull Leipzig, for example. They were away at Napoli on Thursday night,
but they still have to play the second leg. That's what I don't understand about this. It seems like they're trying to hide behind that reason. We'll get to my perspective in a second.
That's obviously what a lot of fans have said, and a lot of the fans said, well, if you want to give Europa League teams an extra day, then just play on Sunday. That's been fine for you. Teams play Champions League Wednesday to Saturday, so why can't we play Europa League teams on Thursday to Sunday? The DFL's response to that was, well, the reason we don't want too many games on Sunday is because Sunday is traditionally the day for amateur football in Germany. It's when a lot of the Division 4 regional league games and beneath take place. Obviously, like I said before the Gladbach game, I popped into a Division 6 game to see what was going on there. So that's when it takes place. So the DFL argued, no, we don't want to tread on the amateurs' toes too much. Obviously, the fans respond to that saying, well, we don't believe that at all, because since when, in the fans' opinion, have the DFL really cared about what amateur football has to offer? That's what the cynic would argue. For the fans, and it's often the same reasons that we hear regarding VAR, regarding all sorts of things that the fans have been protesting against, kickoff times. it's the same issue. The fans say this is another part of the attack and assault on their fan culture, because they say, how can a fan be expected to travel to an away game across the breadth of the country
on a Monday night?
Yeah. It means taking at least one day off work. It means taking holidays, which you might not have. And it's how is that feasible? And the suspicion is similar to the VAR debate and other debates that, well, those in charge don't care. They only care about how many more euros can they squeeze out of media rights, as negligible as they may be. What can they do more to boost TV viewing figures, which I'm sure are big enough on a Monday night. Frankfurt fans have announced a boycott. Well, an atmosphere boycott. Not an outright boycott, an atmosphere boycott.
Well, obviously there's that one, and there's the one, I think the more prevalent one is the one you wrote about a few weeks ago, which is the Borussia Dortmund fans against Augsburg.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see how that goes. I think I'm going to that game. I'll be in Dortmund next Monday to see how that goes. But yeah, as we said, the major Borussia Dortmund fan groups have announced, or they've called on fellow fans not just to not sing or refuse to take flags, but to just not attend the game, stay away and not pass the tickets on, in the hope that it will result in swathes of empty seats on TV or a big hole on the yellow wall, which is obviously not good for the Bundesliga from a marketing point of view. And at the last count, I think over 315 Dortmund fan clubs had signed up to that appeal to agree, say no, they won't go. So it'll be interesting to see what effect that has. It's hard to predict exactly how much the attendance will fall. Augsburg fans have also said, well, they're not going either. And that's precisely the point. Augsburg is 600 kilometres south of Dortmund, just to the west of Munich. How on earth are you, as an Augsburg fan, you've got work Monday and Tuesday, how can you make a 1,200 kilometre round trip to Dortmund on a Monday night? It's not feasible. How can you? The argument seems obvious.
I think we were talking about 50+1 last week, and if you missed that debate, you got to listen to it. But I think one of the arguments for that one is if you take a step forward, if you start the marble rolling down the table, how far will it roll?
It's just going to accelerate, and that's the suspicion of the fans. In fairness to the DFL, they have come out and tried to reassure the fans, no, this, it will never ever be more than five. But given recent developments, you can understand why supporters are suspicious and quite simply don't believe them when they say that. They say, well, the other argument is, of course, that midweek games are nothing new. Right. We have to recognise that as well.
They have to play 34 games in
it's always been the case in
7 months.
Well, the first Bundesliga season was in 1963-64, and since then there have been many seasons where there have been more games during the week than there are this season. I was researching it earlier on today for a piece that the high point was the 1991-92 season, which was the first Bundesliga season where both East and West were together again after reunification. That season, I think, was at 37% of Bundesliga fixtures were during the week. That was partly to do with the fact that the league was bigger that year.
Yeah, it was 20 teams,
because
right?
Because a few Eastern German teams, I think Dynamo Dresden, yeah, Hansa Rostock had been assimilated into the league. So yeah, 37% that year. This year, with the five Monday games, only 17%. Of Bundesliga games are during the week. So there have been more in the past, but that doesn't take away from the argument that the fans are worried that, again, it's just these, it's constant little steps, right? Exceptions to 50+1, introduction of VAR, more investors, Monday night games, on their own, all little things. But there's just this creeping suspicion among fans. They find themselves constantly confronted by changes which affect them slightly negatively, ever so slightly. But when you see the whole picture, you start to see why they're frustrated.
Yeah, I think there are some instances where the small negativity kind of can have a much more positive payoff. And I think that if you don't accept these negative steps and you keep your heels dug in your entire life, then basically players wouldn't have wages and clubs we wouldn't have a successful national league and all of that, because you need to have progress somehow. But at the same time, I apologize for being American for several reasons outside of this podcast, but I apologize for saying it again.
It's a genuinely invaluable opinion to have on it, because it's precisely the audience that the Bundesliga are targeting, and like I've said before on the podcast, there are extremely positive sides to that, because we can discuss all aspects of the Bundesliga and German football with people all over the world, and that's a huge positive of technological development and progress.
Yeah. So what I was going to say is, I was thinking when I was thinking of Thursday night football games in the NFL, which they started with just a handful, and then they made it like half the season was Thursday night games. The second half of the season was Thursday night games, Thursday night games, and now it's almost every week, and the fans hate it. It's clearly for television reasons, and it kind of makes the NFL kind of secures this corporate identity that the NFL now has. And it wasn't this way, of course, 20 years ago when they were still competing with other sports, but it's like we said, it's those small steps towards basically having this corporate identity rather than having basically a niche fan sport, which it had its own charm in and of its own, and instead it's a money making machine. Now I think I really do think that the Europa League excuse is complete hogwash, because
in my personal opinion too.
It's
because half the teams aren't even in it.
Exactly, and also is RB Leipzig really going to benefit from having an extra day when they get a one less day their second leg?
Ralf Rangnick believes so. He was quoted in Kicker, I think it was, last week, saying that from a footballing point of view, of course they're welcome. They're happy to have an extra day's rest, because the players can get back from Napoli, have a couple of days off to really recuperate and then train properly. I do accept that, but like we said, it could have been done on a Sunday. It could have been done on a slot where the game would not be available for TV. And ultimately, but they wouldn't do that. Why? It's not because they're scared of stepping on the amateurs' toes. It's because
they're not even scared of stepping on the second Bundesliga's toes. Monday night was Bundesliga night. It was like it was almost a premier fixture in a way for the second Bundesliga.
That's been a welcome thing for fans.
Not either, but at the very least they have their, I mean, I've watched several Monday second Bundesliga games because there isn't a Bundesliga game that day, and now that's gone. Now, whether they clear or not is regardless, and maybe the second Bundesliga fans, I don't know if they probably don't like it either.
I'm sure that I don't imagine it's much different. However, you do have the slightly ironic situation on several levels of the Red Bull Leipzig fans also boycotting this game, because they're in Division 2 and they weren't boycotting Monday night games then. And the even more cynical part of me thinks, if you've got a problem with over commercial developments in modern football, maybe look a little bit closer to home, lads.
So thank you guys again for doing voting for both of these topics. I hope that we gave you what you guys wanted, which is a little bit extra podcast, but adding a fourth topic, which it seems like it was desired this week.
How do you think it's going to go tonight anyway? Frankfurt, Red
Bull. Would be a great game. I mean, if they were picking a Monday night game, that this would be the one to do it.
That answers the question, doesn't it, is why they're doing it, because we're looking forward to a good match.
Yeah, so Frankfurt, and I think Frankfurt, they're so good at home. I wouldn't assume that Leipzig would win, even though they're
a good one. On current form, I'm also fancying Frankfurt to nick it. Just on current form, really.
So, but we got to get out of here because we got to go watch the game. So that'll do it for this week's edition of the Tribune Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, and if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. Matt Ford is at Matt_4D, and I'm Davis_Benoffer. Before we go, here is our stat of the week. Sander Wagner scored a thunderous header in Bayern Munich's 2-1 victory over Wolfsburg. That was his 11th headed-in goal since the start of the 2015-16 season when he became a regular in the Bundesliga, and that is the most in the Bundesliga over that period of time. Thanks for listening. We hope to hear from you next week.